everybody, and welcome to the DestroForAuts.com Anime and Manga Podcast. As always, this podcast is brought to you by a fuck ton of sponsors, but today they are brought to you by Audible. With over 100,000 audiobooks, including New York Times bestsellers, Audible is your one-stop shop for all your audio and electronic literature needs. Go to audibletrial.com/DestroForAuts to sign up for a free 14-day trial and get yourself a free audiobook. That is audibletrial.com/DestroForAuts. Well, we don't have audiobooks, we do have shirts. So then over to DestroProds.com/store and check them out. We are still accepting shirt design art. You know, if you have some art for a shirt you think we would like, then send it to BobbyOneDestroProds.com or push it in the t-shirt design thread on the forums, and then can pay you if we make it into a shirt. We are still accepting shirt design ideas, we just won't be paying you for them. Sorry. But if you have art, then please, don't hesitate to send it our way. It's BobbyOneDestroProds.com or the t-shirt design thread in the forums. Or, if you don't feel like buying anything, or just feel like helping out some people, then head over to DestroProds.com/extralife and donate. Or join the team and help us fundraise. We are trying to raise $100,000. We are trying to raise $1,000.
$100,000.
We are trying to raise $1 million. Sorry, I don't know why I said $100,000.
You have a big heart, and you really care about the children.
Sure, let's go with that. But yeah, so we were trying to raise $1,000 to help Children's Miracle Network Hospitals.
And status update, we're at 140.
Oh, goody. So yeah, please donate. Every penny you donate goes directly to the hospitals, and all donations are tax deductible. So if you're into that, we got it. Yeah, so please, we're in the final month, and every penny helps. So, DestroProducts.com/extralife, donate or join the team and help us fundraise. I am your host, The Dead Man. Do you know what day we have, Bovion?
Hello.
And Punchtron.
Yeah, hoi hoi.
How you guys doing?
I'm doing alright. I've had some pizza, so I'm nice and full and such.
God damn it, you've caught us off guard. This normally doesn't happen.
I know, we don't really get a chance to talk. We don't really get a chance to, like, talk before these things. It's just... I talk at the beginning of these things, I mean. Like, yeah, we just hit for the Anything Cast, but Pudge, you're never on... You're rarely on the Anything Cast anymore. We never get a chance to talk to you.
Well, that's because I... have school that's been getting steadily piled in on top of me.
Oh.
So... that's what happens.
Yeah. Hey, I had a chance to watch any anime or read any manga.
Hmm?
Have you had a chance to watch any anime or read any manga?
I have.
Oh, then what have you been watching and reading?
Well, hopefully. I would hope I would get it, because, you know.
Yeah.
New season started. New season. By and large, it was... let's just do a general thing about the... new season right now. By and large, it was basically the shows I was going to watch came out as expected. If you're familiar with the series, To Love Through Darkness is pretty much exactly what you would expect out of the anime.
Oh, sweet. They made that into an anime.
Yeah. So, the one that caught me right off guard, though, I wasn't expecting a whole lot out of it, was Zetsuin no Tempest.
Okay. What's that one about?
It's sort of a weird sort of fantasy thing. Taking place in the modern world, sort of present day. And this guy, Yoshino Takigawa, is visiting the family grave of a friend of his, Mahiro Fua, who's been gone for a month after the violent death of his family. After his family was murdered, basically.
So very cheery.
Yeah, and all of a sudden, this woman shows up at the grave and starts questioning him about who he is and why he's there. And basically, this turns into an interrogation at gunpoint for reasons. But Then all of a sudden, Mahiro shows up and beats the ever-living crap out of her. Using magic. Because that's a thing in this series.
Yeah, magic.
Blah. Not magic at all. And basically it's sort of a mystery fantasy thing revolving around Mahiro and sort of exploring how he got his powers and what the person who gave him his powers motivations are, and it's sort of very much looking into motivation and whatnot.
Okay.
Of things and people.
Yep.
And,
yep. And before we go on, just people at home, if you want to play the DestroParrots.com drinking game, take a shot every time you hear Punchatron say basically.
Yeah, do it. You will die.
I was originally going to make it take a drink every time Pudge pauses, but man, I was getting hammered way too quickly.
Yeah, just basically, long story short.
Yeah.
Actually, this is becoming a thing. Take a shot every time we make fun of Pudge on the anime podcast. I've noticed it's become a lot more frequent recently, and I'm kind of sorry.
Take a drink every time we make fun of Pudge and how he talks.
Yeah. And waterfall every time there's dead air.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God.
We are going to kill people with this.
But yeah, this mage.
Oh, and but yeah.
Okay, yeah. Sure, do that one too. This mage who Mahiro got his powers from was sort of marooned on a desert island by her clan, who sort of mutinied her in probably the most literal sense of the word, and basically sealed the island magically so people wouldn't be able to find it. Basically turned it into the Lost Island.
Okay, are there polar bears and wheels that combine light and water and somehow turn back time?
Not yet, but I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, it's only a matter of time. Like, the clock's ticking.
They're there somewhere.
But, yeah.
Yeah, it creates an interesting dynamic as the only real contact they have with each other is sort of a wooden doll thing that Mahiro found in a bottle.
What? They communicate through a wooden doll?
Yeah, a magic one.
Okay.
And she has its pair on the island, and they talk back and forth. And she instructs him on what to do, and she has agreed to help him find the killer, his family's killer.
Is the doll like a Denden Mushi, where it actually like starts making the facial expressions and like moving the mouth along with what the person's saying, or is it just a doll that voices come out of?
Yeah, it's a doll that voices come out of.
Oh, that's bullshit.
He kind of found just a... She did the whole message in a bottle thing.
Yeah, but it's fucking...
The ocean and said, hey, if you found this and you believe in magic, put a nail in this.
Yeah, but again, it's fucking magic. Like, put a nail in it, and then all of a sudden it activates, and then every time you get a call, like, the face starts moving along as the person does.
But no, this doesn't...
Why stop with the face? I mean, you could add the hand expressions, too, and kind of copy their body language.
Oh, then... But then how would, like, they read that? Like, if you're, like, just walking around, is it, like, a little sensor on top of it that actually reads your motion? Or would it be, like, a really weird Kinect thing where just, like, bam, there it is, you go, like, give them a high... You go, like, do something, and all of a sudden, like, the doll in there and just freaks out.
Ahem. Magic.
What? There could still be glitches with magic. You've seen everything that has magic in it. Every once in a while, something goes wrong. And how do you know? And they probably, those people probably put a lot more thought into their, like defensive and protective, like, defensive and offensive spells than they did their communication spells. You know, it's like, all right, so here's the priority list. You gotta learn how to kill shit, learn how to defend against shit, learn how to do all this other shit, and then learn how to talk to each other at great distances. I don't know, let's just fucking put a doll, I don't fucking care.
Well, if at any point the doll can't understand the input of the user, it just defaults to pelvic thrusting.
And it just has autocorrect on it. It's like you just stumble along and, like, And then the other person's like, "The fuck are you saying, dude? I don't even know what any of these words mean." Just auto-corrects a couple words to penis. Because that's actually happened a couple times I've seen on the internet.
Yes.
Anyways, back to the actual explanation of what the series is like.
Yes.
But, well, it sort of... That's how it, that wasn't on the list. but that is basically the gist of it. I pretty much covered it before you went off on that tangent. But it's sort of Mahiro's working to help her get back at her clan for betraying her. So she will help him find his family's killer, and his friend is along for the ride because I'm not sure if because he was going out with Mahiro's sister, but I'm not sure if Mahiro knows this at this point, and it's going to be some interesting dynamic in it's a very interesting dynamic setup
for
the characters and stuff. You know, just the actual geographical separation between two of the major characters for the foreseeable future until she gets off the island.
Okay.
Which I'm sure she will.
Oh, another thing for the Death Row Project game. Take a shot every time I go, or yeah, or okay.
God damn it, man. This game is going to get me drunk way too fast.
You don't have to play while you're in the middle of the podcast.
Well, I'm not going to play it right now, but...
Yeah, actually, afterwards you're going to listen to the podcast and actually... drinking.
I might someday play the Death Door drinking game.
Oh.
Apple game.
That'll be fun. And probably... probably dangerous. But yeah, moving on.
Responsibility for any alcohol poisoning.
Yes. Please drink please drink responsibly. And DestroProz is not liable for any alcohol poisoning or alcohol related deaths brought on by the DestroProz drinking game.
Oh yes. Another one. Every time we make a legal disclaimer.
Do we do that a lot? Like,
actually, we do it often enough, but I'll call that one, that'll be a finisher, you know, just finish your drink every time we make a legal disclaimer. Even if it's about how you should drink responsibly and we're not responsible for your possible death from alcohol poisoning from playing our drinking game.
Send in a picture of you playing the DestroProz.com drinking game, and you may get something. Probably not, but you never know.
And we'll put it on a t-shirt, and you'll get paid based on how well it sells. Oh, God, this has gone so off on a tangent. Anyways.
Back on topic.
Alrighty then, let's move on to the next one. This one is not in the new series, in the new season at all. I just stumbled upon this randomly. I'm not sure why I never saw this before, because it's pretty awesome.
Then wouldn't it fit into your Aimless Wanderings column that you write every other Wednesday and or Thursday, available on DestroProz.com?
It might. Indeed it might, but it was fairly recent, and I already had another idea for the Aimless Wanderings this week, so I'm like, well,
fuck it.
Podcast it is. But so one day in the 21st century, it's purposefully ambiguous, so people don't go, "Ah, it didn't happen today." I guess. But this interdimensional gate opens up in the middle of the Ginza district in Tokyo. And outpour basically soldiers of every fantasy race you can think of.
Huh.
Sort and they kind of, due to the surprise of the attack, they sort of did some serious damage to the populace. And but the JSDF, the Japanese Self-Defense Force, for those who are unaware, basically the Japanese army.
Take a shot.
And so they quickly respond, and well, they're in medieval, the other guys were in medieval armor, so they sort of rip right through them and quickly established a forward base on the other side of the gate in the other world. And so from this base of operations, the JSDF decides to send out multiple recon teams to go out and figure out what the heck's going on with this world, and basically, well, recon. And it follows the one team led by, I don't have his name here, but he's apparently, we're informed that he's a badass, but he doesn't really show that immediately. I mean, I'm sure it'll come up in a serious fight later, but he's like, apparently has like Rangers certification and, you know, deep, deep in anime territory kind of shit.
Yep.
But he's a big otaku and stuff, and that's, he's sort of set up originally as a joke character. And they go out to learn about the world and its people, and it just follows this one recon team around as they meet various people and help out people and spread the niceness of the Japanese government.
Okay. That actually sounds kind of interesting.
It is. It is a lot more interesting than I described it as, really.
Hmm.
There's a lot more going on, but it is essentially just that. They go out and travel around and find people, and there's going to be, I'm assuming, a subplot with the American government trying to seize resources in the other world.
Of course they are.
It's not just the Americans, it's everybody. There's a large faction of the Japanese government that wants to go and use the resources from the other world, basically.
Are there any Canadians?
Not to my knowledge as of yet.
Woo! We're not dicks!
So, you never know. They show up, they may not.
Yeah. Who can know?
But basically, if there's any fantasy creature you can think of, it's almost definitely in there, and they've probably run into it already. So it's entertaining, which is the most important point, I guess, I'd say. And they're quickly forming a small little group with a bunch of local allies and whatnot that will come into a major role later on.
Okay. What was the series called again?
It's called Gate.
Gate, yeah, I don't think I ever mentioned the name of it.
I know I didn't. I really should have said that at the beginning.
Yeah, so Gate, check it out.
Like Gate, thus the JSDF fought there. That's how it translates. There's a Japanese title that I'm not going to attempt.
Yeah, so just check out the Gate manga.
Yeah, it's called Gate, thus the JSDF fought there.
Okay.
Gate JSDF on most completely legal manga sites.
Yes.
That.
Yeah, it's one of the sister sites, completely legal, downlink.com.
Exactly.
And I still want to make that into a shirt. Someone please design a logo for completely legal, downlink.com.
And, all right. Now on to the last one.
Sorry about that.
Which is
Sinistar.
No, not Sinistar. It's Kamen no Maid Guy. I may have mentioned this on our early iterations of our podcast. because I watched this quite a while ago, but I decided it was worth some extra discussion. The description I have in front of me starts off by saying, by and large, a show about breasts and maids, but not put together.
What?
And this is a... So the ridiculously well-endowed Naika Fujiwara and her brother Kosuke are the last heirs in line to their grandfather's massive empire fortune, with especially Naika, because her 18th birthday is coming up, as you know, coming of age and all that jazz. So in order to protect them, as they are likely to become targets of people farther down the line who want the money or just kidnappers or whatnot.
Yep.
Their grandfather sends two live-in maids to stay with them and protect them and whatnot. The one maid is basically completely normal in every way. She's, you know, sort of a defense maid type, so she can fight and whatnot, but other than that, she's just a completely normal maid, what you would expect. The second is Kogarashi. Kogarashi, I may have slurred that name. And he's called the maid guy for reasons that become obvious once you see him. And yes, I said him. He is a giant man who wears a maid outfit and who is wildly inappropriate. And it's the most hilarious thing I've ever seen.
Okay, that sounds...
It's just... he is basically the definition of a scary-looking bully character. You know, he's... I'll see if I can track down a picture to show at least you guys in the podcast. Because, frankly, just the picture itself is comedy. Is pure comedy gold.
If it's as good as you say it is, I think it should be the image for this podcast.
Yeah. We shall see. Yeah.
And that's what he looks like all the time.
Okay, yeah, you got to put that in. I'm gonna find a bigger image of that and use it as the post image.
Yeah, picture the most muscular man you can think of.
Then put him in a dress.
And put him in a maid outfit. And then the little hair frilly thing. Pull that down over his eyes to wear it sort of like as a mask. With eye holes that glow. And pointy teeth.
Oh my god, yeah, that is...
And that's the maid. So, basically, it's just the misadventures of Naika and Kogarashi. As they're the two that were paired together. And... it is just a slew of, Fubuki beating up on Kogarashi for being inappropriate with, she carries around a nail bat.
Of course she does. I mean,
just so you know.
I mean, it's standard, you know, young Japanese girl, I guess, it's a fashion faux pas to not have a nail bat.
Yeah, but Kogarashi is basically invincible. Hilarious, as opposed to worrying.
Okay, yeah, that sounds like a thing I should get into.
It was unfortunately a single episode series followed by an OVA, but hilarious and just the antics that get gotten up to.
So yeah, you said that was it?
Yes, that will be the last I talk about today.
Okay, Bobby Wan, what have you been watching and reading?
Alright, well, there was a couple other things I will say I wanted to get into, but my internet has been a dick while I've been home with internet. So unfortunately I didn't manage to get as much in as I wanted to, but I got a few things in. So first, I'm back on to my usuals, which are Fairy Tail and Naruto.
Okay.
Naruto had a terrible, terrible, terrible OVA that I think I need to talk about.
Okay, yes, let's talk about terrible, terrible OVAs.
So, think of one story arc that was actually good, like really good, in the original anime that should not be transferred over to Shippuden.
Oh, fuck. Oh, what was there? I don't know. I can't remember a lot of arcs in the original series.
The Shunin exams.
What? They did it.
Especially in an OVA.
What? They did another Shunin exam?
Yes. So this OVA is basically placed in the timeline between when the Fourth Great Ninja War officially starts and when Naruto gets shipped out of his village. So we really need to focus here about the fact that this war was supposed to be hidden from Naruto.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like the reason he's on that island and he doesn't know anything about the war is because they want him to stay on that island. If he knew about the war, he'd just be like, fuck this, I'm out.
Which at this point in, you know, the proper storyline of the anime, he's already left.
Oh yeah, he is. He is peaced.
But in the OVA, you know, they went back to this point in the storyline. And it starts off with Gaara giving a speech about how in the wake of this new war, with Naruto standing right there, because of course he's taking part in the Shunin exams, we must train new Shunins.
He's still a Genin, isn't he?
Yes. Yes, he is.
I still find that hilarious. Like, Naruto is pretty much the strongest of his age in that village, and he is still fucking Genin.
Not even just strongest of his age. He's one of the strongest in the village at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, it's strongest in the village, and he's still just fucking Genin.
It's
fucking hilarious.
But then, the whole focus of this is, for the first stage of the test, they do kind of what the second stage of the test was. The third stage of the test was in the original arc, which is the sort of one-on-one tournament.
Yeah. The big arena.
Yeah. So, the whole focus of this episode is it's Naruto versus Konohamaru.
Oh god, that.
And rightfully so, Naruto's pretty much kicking his ass.
Oh yeah, definitely. Like, Konohamaru cannot beat Naruto.
Does not bring out any fancy moves, just, you know, with his fighting, straight up, using some Rasengans, using some Kagebushin, is kicking his ass. Pardon me, I think I'm about to sneeze.
Yep, waterfall till the sneeze is over, guys.
Okay, I'm not going to sneeze. Actually, one of the greatest things to happen at the beginning of the fight is everyone in the crowd is like, oh, Konohamaru is never going to beat Naruto. Naruto is like one of the strongest people in the village. Get out of here, kid. They're generally being dicks.
Oh, yeah. That's what the crowd does. They're supposed to be dicks.
And anyways, they all suddenly get a shock, look of shock on their face when it opens up with both of them doing a huge amount of Kagebushin, and then the entire arena is just filled with smoke from them rapidly dispelling each other's clones.
Okay.
Yeah, and then what? as the fight moves on, we see Kona Hamaru being like, I just want to get him one hit. I just want to get him one hit. I just want to get him one hit. I just want to get him one fucking hit. And so finally, he does this really awesome combo when he tells you what family member he learned each move from. Like, okay. I learned this from my grandfather, the Hokage. I learned this from my Uncle Asuma. And, you know, he does this awesome combo and he lands a single hit on Naruto. And then he's like, I'm Kono Hamaru and I'm going to be the next Hokage. And Naruto's like, I'm afraid I can't let you do... I can't let you become Hokage that easily. And we don't see Naruto, but we see a bunch of people in the crowd going, idiot, 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 idiot. And then it's revealed that earlier on, when Naruto wasn't listening and was being his loud, obnoxious self, Gaara explained that sage techniques are not allowed in this exam. And then the camera turns to reveal that Naruto's got the sage eyes, so he loses for breaking the rules.
Bullshit.
Wah, wah. First of all, sage techniques not being allowed? I seem to remember the last exam allowing murder.
Yeah. It's like, sure you can summon your fucking sand demon, but use sage techniques, you're disqualified.
Yeah, you can pretty much do whatever you want as long as it's something you're capable of doing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you can murder someone with a sand coffin. What, you want to turn into a demon? Go ahead, turn into a demon.
Like, I don't give a fuck, but sage? Fuck you. Maybe they're just sagist.
Anyways, the other big thing, the whole setup of it was honestly dumb. And then Kono Hamaru's still again in afterwards, so I guess despite beating Naruto, he didn't do well in the exams, despite the fact he probably would have kicked ass of anybody else there.
Yeah, because he didn't beat Naruto. Naruto fucked up.
Yeah, that.
Anything, it might have like hurt Naruto's chances of actually becoming a Chunin.
But it counted as Konohamaru's victory, so he's now advanced in whatever tournaments for the exams. And I guarantee you, none of the other Genins are stronger than Konohamaru. I mean, he's not as strong as Naruto, but he's pretty fucking strong. He did defeat one of Pain's bodies.
Yeah, true.
So he would kick a lot of ass.
And he can do
Rasengan. And afterwards, it's not a Genin. This is the whole problem I have with OVAs and movie fillers and everything, is they never fit in the fucking timeline.
Yeah. It
bugs me.
Yeah. It's kind of bullshit. Anyway.
But the main part of the series, it's been revealed that Zetsu can clone other people's chakra, and so there's been this whole thing of people seeing replicas of themselves and nobody trusting anybody. And
wait, what?
This whole thing works.
It's turned into ninja the thing?
Kind of.
Well, yeah, don't you remember that part? That happened.
I do, but now that I think about it, Neji got copied, right?
Yeah, he was the first one we really saw that for. His copy killed a bunch of people at the medical camp.
Yeah, that was stupid.
And then there was the whole Shino, Hinata, and Kiba thing.
Yeah, I can't remember much of the early parts of the war.
Anyways, ooh. Yeah, so the war, I guess, is progressing kind of nicely.
Yeah,
and
right now in the manga, we're getting backstory of how Obito became Tobi.
And I will find that exceptionally interesting.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. Like, actually, the ending of the most recent chapter, it was, well, not the most recent, like, last week's chapter, I guess. That was pretty cool. Just the ending of it.
Yeah. Certainly was. I'm sort of interested to see why.
Yeah, to see what the hell happened leading up to that.
Yeah, because I'm sure there's a reason for it.
Oh yeah. And like, it's actually kind of strange because like with most things like this, you see someone blaming themselves for something. It was usually because they like either didn't get to them in time or were so like beaten the fuck out of them that they couldn't do anything. It's not very often that they actually did it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's gonna be weird.
So, moving on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My other usual series, Fairy Tail. I finished up the Battle of Fairy Tail arc because I'm still, you know, back in time. Although, the Exceptionally Stupid filler arc is over, so I might just go back to current stuff. Instead of, you know, going back in time.
Yeah.
I've noticed there's a lot less of the shoutouts to future episodes as there was in the beginning.
Okay.
Like I said, when I went back and I watched some of the stuff, it made me laugh my ass off because I actually got what they meant because they were referring to stuff that's going to happen in the future. Particularly the scene with that one fortune teller. Like, you will encounter trouble with women in water. It's like, that's 3 seasons from now. But I digress.
Yes.
Yeah, it is one of my favorite arcs, so I very much enjoyed watching it. If anybody wants to get into Fairy Tail, it's a good arc to go to if you don't want to watch absolutely all of it. You should probably watch the first arc to get introduced.
Then well, you should watch all of it because it's good
stuff. Yeah, I was about to say, you know, I'm starting to run out of things that are actually skippable. Although I don't particularly like the Orashian Cess arc. I'm a little bit eh about it. Important stuff happens there.
Hmm.
Like the introduction of Wendy.
Ah, yes, Wendy.
And Gerard coming back.
Yeah, and now it's dragons.
Yes, so I've heard.
Yeah, we gotta hear a dragon talk. Well, kind
of. Yay!
And we also figured out what the hell the eclipse plan is.
Anyway, so moving on to my only other series, which is something I don't usually watch by any stretch of the imagination, Pokemon Indigo League. I can't tell you exactly what episodes I watched because it was kind of like the first season was just running and I watched a good chunk of the episodes but also got pulled away for a chunk of the episodes. I have a younger brother. He had Pokemon DVDs. But also demanded to be entertained with stuff other than TV. So,
well then fuck that kid. Nah, I'm just kidding. TV is a thing of the past.
But yeah, so Pokemon Indigo League, it's cheesier than I remember, and that's saying a lot.
Yeah, kind of, like, oh god, Pokemon.
I don't know how many years it's been since I watched that show, but I was actually impressed that you could find it on DVD. Like,
oh god,
as easily as you can. Because there's been...
It's got to have been at least a decade since I've watched any Pokemon.
Yeah, and like, there's been so many different shows since that one. It was good to see the original with the 150, and at the end of every one of the 3 DVDs in the first season is the Pokemon rap.
Oh god, Pokemon rap. Oh man, that's... At some point, Anime Club, the Pokemon stuff.
I'm actually kind of torn. I know the next pick is Pudge's, but for mine, I'm like, I either have to do Pokemon, or I have to do Weiss Survive. I can't decide.
Yes, oh man.
And like, yeah, it's bad. I will not say that it's good. It's like, it's so much nostalgic awesomeness.
Yeah.
But it's not like I'm watching it in subbed. I'm not sure if the subbed would be good, but of course you're watching the dubbed, because this is one of those childhood memory things. You don't care about subbed dubbed when you're trying to pump the sweet heroin and nostalgia into your veins. You're just wanting to see what you saw when you were a kid. So you watch the really bad voice dubbing and the really bad...
And then about four episodes in, you crash and then just like start hovering in the corner, like shaking.
One thing I've noticed, though, is I've always known about 4Kids' censorship of rice balls.
God, Fox really hates Japan.
Early on, now watching the earlier on episodes, I realized they didn't have the budget to censor them properly. See, when you watch later episodes, it's always redrawn as a peanut butter sandwich or something like that. Only in the earlier episodes, it's not redrawn. They just call them jelly donuts. And it's hilarious because you can see the seaweed wrap on it. It's all sorts of shapes, and there's clearly no jelly in it, but they're jelly donuts. Yeah, similar censorship.
Because children are stupid.
Similar censorship. 4Kids doesn't like to show guns. They have often taken guns out of things. There's this hilarious scene. The first time we see Team Rocket ever holding guns, it's like clearly assault rifles. They burst into this store demanding whatever they're demanding. I can't remember. But James then says the most ridiculous and clearly for the purposes of censorship lines. These are ice guns we're packing. Ice guns.
What the fuck?
They don't look any different than regular guns. No effort has been made to make them look any different.
Well, it has to be authentic. You know, it's like those paintball guns. They actually look like real guns.
Although in a later episode, they don't bother censoring the fucking rocket launchers. Although I think they come up with some excuse for them, too. I just can't remember what it was.
They're ice kins. They fire snowballs.
It's something stupider.
Your t-shirt cannons?
No, sorry. It was something else. They have a bunch of bombs that they're using to try and blow up the Squirtle Squad. And they say, and they keep calling it flash powder.
Oh,
and it's clearly blowing shit up, but no, it's flash powder.
Oh, it's shit like that that makes me glad they're under now.
Yeah. Oh, God.
I love 4Kids censorship. Like, it's terrible, but it's so goddamn entertaining.
Yeah, it's like when you go into those movies and, like, motherfucker has said, like, every other line in the movie, and so you just have to see them try to, like, find ways to work around motherfucker. Like, sometimes just cut it...
You mother lover.
Like, sometimes they just cut it out really, like, completely show it. But then other times they just, like, take sound bites from other movies that person has been in where they said worms started with M or F.
One of the worst ones was Die Hard 3, Melon Farmer.
I saw this really great one on YouTube of Snakes on a Plane, where he's doing, when I had it with these motherfucking snakes, these motherfucking plane, and they replaced it, like, and so the first motherfucker was something like M something F something, but then the second motherfucker was a different M something F something. So they couldn't even keep their own, like, they couldn't even keep their own fake swearing right.
Oh, God.
It's like, I've had it with these melon farming snakes and this monkey farting plane. Or something real stupid.
And oh, God, forget the epic line, yippee-ki-yay, my friend.
Oh, my God.
I'm not making that one up.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's great.
But yeah, I guess the only other thing I have to say about freaking Pokemon Indigo League is I sang that theme song opening, closing, every time. Which back-to-back episodes means I would finish singing it once and then start singing it again.
Oh man, yeah, those shows.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's movie.
That's it for me.
Okay, on to me. I've read two series that I haven't talked about before. Yeah, so let's start off with Assassination Classroom. This is weird. So it's in modern day Japan, and one day, somehow, like, something destroys three quarters of the moon. Just gone. Now there's just a crescent-shaped moon for all eternity in the sky. Then one day, the creature that destroyed it, a big yellow octopus, shows up and says, "Hey, I destroyed the moon. I'm gonna destroy the Earth in a year, but let me become a teacher and train a classroom of the kids to assassinate me. If they kill me, the Earth survives. If they don't, they still learn something, and I still destroy the Earth."
They and still so, learn something, but then they're dead.
Yeah, but they take that knowledge to their graves. You know, that way in the afterlife or something, if there's ever a pop arithmetic quiz, they can handle it. But anyway, so yeah, this guy who the kids call Koto-sensei, because I guess Koto is something either means indestructible or it's like a target or something. But yeah, it's just a classroom of kids who are all given guns and knives, but they're like special guns and knives that can't hurt humans, but like anytime they touch the teacher, he explodes, kind of. But he can, like, regenerate insanely quickly. And he can also move at speeds of Mach 20. So it's actually the hitting him part that's hard. And so, yeah, they just spend every day learning basic school shit and trying to murder their teacher. And yeah, it is just bizarrely hilarious. It's like, yeah, it's like gym class. Like half the school is just like half the class is just like playing volleyball, like in the out in the back of the out in their sports field, like normal kids. And the other half of the class is trying to stab their teacher repeatedly in the face, but talking the exact same way they would while they were playing volleyball. So they just like, "I'm dropping towards you," and they just like thrust the knife at the guy's face and just have him like have Koto-sensei just like shoot towards another kid who's like trying to do like a downward thrust into his skull, but then he dodges that one. And it's just this really insanely bizarre and awesome thing of this guy. He's actually a really good teacher. Like, this class at the school that they're in, they are the worst class. With most classes, you know, you're put in a class and you stay there. But if your grades drop below a certain level, you are transferred to this class, which is the worst of the worst of the school. And like everyone in the school treats them like shit because the supervisor of the school is like some really weird tyrannical dick who says like, in order to have the perfect school, we need to have one class that is ostracized and hated by everybody else. Yeah, because I guess that's how schooling works.
We cannot achieve greatness without hate.
Exactly. And so this thing, Koto-sensei, he just shows up. He's like, "Hey, I'll teach you class. Just have him try to kill me." He's like, "I don't want to die, but, you know, I'll give you a chance." And so the students, they are learning something, and they actually like their teacher, but they're still spending every second of every day trying to kill him.
Well, I'm conflicted whether he'll even be able to go through with his threat, because he only was able to blow up three quarters of the moon. That's like, at best, like half of the United States.
Maybe it was an empty threat that he cannot actually.
If he can destroy the entire Earth.
No, I mean, like, so if you look at the moon, like, I'm not saying so if you look at the moon now, like, the crescent shape of the moon, that is the entire shape of the moon. There isn't, like, some other part that's hidden in darkness. It's just, there is a huge chunk of the moon just missing. Like
if I'm just, aware.
Yeah.
You'd think he'd take out the entire moon, though, if he could.
Yeah, it's still,
So if he can't take out the entire moon, why should we believe that he can take out the Earth?
Because shut up.
The only thing I can see him doing is throwing the rest of the moon at it,
which would still kill quite a bit of us. While it may or may not be true that he could destroy the entire Earth, he will still kill a good portion of the planet and probably throw the planet. Like, if you if you take away enough mass from something, it can throw off its orbit and kill everyone else on it. Like, I'm actually surprised the moon is still where it is.
Yeah, the physics of that probably don't work.
Yes, but I'm guessing, like, he is constant. But it wouldn't surprise me if he was just, like, constantly pushing the moon back into orbit, like, every once in a while. Because he's able to move fast enough to, like, clone himself, essentially. That's actually one of the great jokes in it. Like, so there's this one bit where they're getting, where, like, all the students are going to try to get their, they're, like, in the middle of testing. It's, like, a high school, like, mock exams or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so the teacher is giving each one of them individual training, individual, like, lessons, all at the same time. In their worst subjects. So you just have, like, so you just have, like, 30 clones of the same guy, but they're all just after images. And they all have different headbands on. Like, one says, like, history, one says, like, math. Then one kid gets, like, one kid just gets a guy with a Naruto headband. And he's like, why the hell am I the only one who gets a Naruto headband? The fuck is this? Because apparently he's bad at everything. And yeah, it is a bizarre series, but it's really entertaining. I really like Koro-sensei as, a character. Because even though he is trying to destroy the planet, he's a really nice guy and really fun, too. And, like, his facial expression never really changes. Like, he always has a big smile on his face. And it actually worked that in really well, because he has, like, because the way he expresses emotion is through, like, lines on his face. Like, if someone gets a correct answer on a test, like, a big circle will appear on his face. If someone, like, gets a wrong answer, like, a big X will appear across his face. If he's, like, looking down on somebody, like, brick, like, his face will alternate between red and, like, his face will alternate between red and yellow, just, like, showing that he's looking down on you. If he's really mad, his face turns red. But if he gets, like, insanely mad, his face turns completely black. And they managed to work a lot of emotion into this character, whose facial expression never really changes. Never really changes from big smile on his face and big black eyes that don't really blink or anything. And yeah, but the one thing that really bugs me is the main character is supposed to be a guy, but he has twin pigtails on his head like a girl. Like, when I first saw him, I was like, oh, hey, is that chick the main character? And it's like, oh, no. It's like, oh, hey, he's a dude. Wait, what? No, he's not. He's not a guy. He is not a guy.
You shouldn't judge people for their life choices.
I'm not. It's just it just kind of bugs me. I don't know why. It is a really fun, manga, and you should definitely check it out if you get the chance. Now, moving on to the second thing. The Friendly Winter. This is weird. Like, it's very, very, very bizarre. So, there are two main characters. This thing's Korean, so the names are Min Seong and Da Jeong. So, Da Jeong has a growth disability, where even though she's 19, she has the body of a 7-year-old. And then, Min Seong has a mental disability, wherein he has the body of a 17-year-old, but the mind of a 7-year-old. And so it's just these two people living life with their disabilities. I'm not sure if it's supposed to be a romance or anything. It's very bizarre.
That'd be weird. That means they're both dating 7-year-olds. Kind of.
Yeah, it's really weird. Like,
without either of them actually being 7-year-olds.
Yeah, it's very bizarre because they'd both be like dating they'd both be dating within the acceptable age range of what both of them appear. Like, one of them has like the mentality of a teenager, should be dating someone who's physically a teenager, but then there's another person who's mentally like a child who's dating someone who looks like a child. And it's just really bizarre. But it just gets really emotionally charged at certain points. Like, so at one bit, there's a flashback to Da Jeong as a kid, and we see her mother leaving her, saying, like she's like, Mommy, why are you leaving? It's like, please don't leave. It's like, it's because of me, isn't it? She's like, and the mom's like, yeah, it is because of you. Your fucking medical bills and everything are just too much fucking much. I can't be happy if I'm with you. So fuck off.
Ouch.
And then while she is, like, Facebook stalking this guy who lives in the same apartment complex as her that she's in love with, kind of, she sees someone like commenting on his pictures, who's a girl, and then looks at the picture of her and sees that her sees that that kid's mom or stepmom is her mother. And she's like, and so her mom is off having a happy family with some other kid. And so then she starts like leaving a bunch of threatening posts on her Facebook page, just saying, "Oh, it looks like you're fucking horror and shit." And then they just go and meet each other. But she obviously can't show up as like a 7 year. But she obviously can't show up looking like a 7 year old. So she brings Min Seong along. And it's a bizarre series, but I kind of like it. Like, I can honestly say I haven't read anything else like it. And I kind of like, and I kind of like the emotion. I kind of like the emotional aspect of it. It's really cool. So yeah, the Friendly Winter. It's not for everyone, but you might find something you like in it. I know I enjoyed it.
Yeah, just from your description, those almost every character in that show sounds all kind of fucked up.
No, it's like, the mom is kind of fucked up, but she's only in there for like 7 pages. The two leads are, you know, a bit weird, but they are saying like, "Oh, my disability is preventing me from doing this. My disability is doing this. Like, I'm being abandoned because of my disability." They are managing to live with it, and like with them with each other, since they're both like kind of point counterpoint to each other, they do get along well because of it. And yeah, it's a bizarre series, but I do kind of recommend it. So that's what we're watching. On to news.
Hooray, so, news.
Yep, so I guess first up, G-Kids is doing the English language voice casting for Up on Poppy Hill, which is, I believe, a Miyazaki film. Yeah, he wrote the screenplay for it with his kid, with his son, and the kid directed it. And so they've announced the English voice cast, including Gillian Anderson from The X-Files, Jamie Lee Curtis from Jamie Lee Curtis, Christina Hendricks from Mad Men, Ron Howard, and Jeff Dunham.
This sounds like, oh, I guess it is Miyazaki, so they'd have a voice cast of, you know, actual actors instead of the people that generally do anime dubs.
But Jeff Dunham, the stand-up comedian who has all the puppets.
Yeah, I know. He's got a versatile voice.
That's while trying
to make his lips not move.
But that's still just kind of out of nowhere. Like, hey, Gillian Anderson, Jamie Lee Curtis, Christina Hendricks, Ron Howard, all these big-name actors. And then the guy who does Ahmed the Dead Terrorist.
Once again, you're looking for a voice actor, a ventriloquist is a very good place to go.
Yeah. It's a bit weird seeing Jeff Dunham's name on this list. But yeah, so that's happening. Moving on. The staff for the Saint Young Men film has been announced. So, directing the film, we have Noriko Takao, who's an episode director on Clannad K-On! And Lucky Star. The screenplay by Rika Nezu, who did Kimi ni Todoke and Absolute Boyfriend. The character designer is Naoyuki Asano, who is the chief animation director for the Doraemon films. That's the animation is going to be produced by A1 Pictures. Going to have music from Keiichi Suzuki, who did Tokyo Godfathers No. 6, the live version of Uzumaki. And Outrage Beyond, and she's going to have help from Ryome Shirai, who did the music for 20th Century Boys. It's going to be produced by Aniplex Kodansha and Toho, and it's going to be distributed by Toho Films. And what's that noise?
What is that?
That may be on my end. I think somebody might have flushed the toilet upstairs. Ignore it, carry on.
Yeah, and so they also said that along with the film, we're going to be getting an OVA.
Ooh.
So the OVA is going to be shipped out with the with the special edition of the 8th volume of the manga on December 3rd. And while there isn't a official release date, the production site proudly claims that this will be released sometime this century.
Well, that's good to know.
And that's a direct quote, too.
Yeah.
I might live to see this movie happen.
I probably won't. Yeah, so, moving on. The Count of Monte Cristo is getting a manga. Yep. The classic French tale of revenge and shit. It's getting adapted into a manga from the guy who made Samurai Gun, Kazuhiro Kumagai. So the adaptation is going to be launching in the 11th issue of Suisha's Grand Jump Premium Magazine on October 24th.
Sorry, yep. I didn't hear most of that because I sneezed my headphones off.
The guy who made Samurai Gun is going to be making a Count of Monte Cristo manga.
All right.
Yep.
That's the gist of it.
Pretty much. And finally, Akihiko Hoshide, who is an astronaut currently on the International Space Station, just finished recording some lines that he's going to be doing for his appearance in Space Brothers, an anime about astronauts. Yep. So a real astronaut is going to be an anime about astronauts, and he recorded his lines while in space.
That's pretty awesome.
Fuck yeah, it is.
Authenticity for the win.
Yeah. So, Hoshide will be appearing in the 31st episode of the anime, which will be airing on November 4th.
Not sure about whether he'll be playing himself or not or something, but yeah. He will be a character in the show in that episode.
Yep. So, that does it for news. Now it's time for Anime Club!
Yay!
Yes, this week we watched Card Fight Vanguard. I picked this one.
Oh, what a wonderful choice it was.
Yeah, like, I saw so many, just everywhere I looked, I saw ads for Card Fight Vanguard. I was like, fuck it, I'm gonna look into this show. And so, hey, you guys watch Yu-Gi-Oh? It's kind of like that, but less magical.
Now, from the opening, I gather that there's gonna be more of the freaking giant hologram platforms.
I watched 15 episodes. There was one.
Okay, well, I watched four. I tried to watch a fifth.
Everything else was a very vivid hallucination.
My internet decided to be a dick. Yeah, I kind of, that's a better way of showing the representation. Although the weird thing is, despite the fact they have to imagine their characters doing all this fighting, and they're very dramatic about it.
Oh yeah, like I said, imagine Yu-Gi-Oh! But less magical. It's just people in a card shop, like, standing in front of a table with, like, a paper mat in front of them, freaking the fuck out and, like, throwing down their cards, like, screaming, like, Riot from on high, give me your glorious power, Knight King of Knights. And then throwing down a card, his name's Alfred.
but the one thing I noticed is the playmats are reactive.
Yeah, that's the thing! Like, I'm pretty sure that everything we see is just the people who are actually in the match having a shared hallucination. Because
what? You wouldn't, like, use a reactive playmat? You're telling, like, me if they made a reactive playmat for Magic the Gathering, you would not buy that shit.
I probably would. But that's the thing. If it only just, like, brought up, like, okay, so I throw this down on this circle, and then, whoa, this circle, like, comes up and rotates slightly to the left. Because that's all the mats did. Like, they had to imagine the actual battle and themselves as the spirits on the planet Kray, because in the mythology of this game, you are spirits on the planet Kray. Like, it didn't show any of that. It was just, yeah, the circuit put the thing in, it lifted up and kind of turned a bit.
Yeah, I'm guessing that's all that something like that would do.
But yeah, it, like, oh god, it is so Yu-Gi-Oh!
Very much so, although I do like that it spent more time in the card shop than Yu-Gi-Oh! Did, whereas Yu-Gi-Oh! Is like, hey, we're playing at school a little bit. Hey, we went to a card shop. Oh, now Egyptian mythology and shit.
Yeah, this one, it doesn't have any Egyptian mythology behind it. It's just, hey, it's a card game that sweep the nation.
Now,
and so we have...
The other thing I really liked about the series is it explains the rules and then follows the rules.
Yeah, well, there have been a couple times where, like, we're looking at this, like, wait, aren't you going to check for a drive trigger? Like, come on, just drive trigger, twin drive, come on, do this fucking shit. And they're like, nope, no drive trigger. Let me show them pulling out the cards and saying no trigger. Because I'm pretty sure I can actually play this game now.
Yeah, well,
having watched 50 episodes, I can play this goddamn game.
It's very similar to Weiss Schwarz.
Yeah, it's a very simple game to pick up and play, too. Like I said, first episode, I could pretty much play it.
Weiss Schwarz, a bit more complicated, but it's got very similar dynamics. Like damage triggers, the only thing being that Weiss Schwarz, the damage triggers, I just have to point this out for a difference in the card game that I just need to let you know about. If you get a damage trigger, any damage trigger negates all damage from that attack. There are cards that you can get up to 50 damage, thus
wow.
Making them utterly useless because the person will absolutely get a trigger.
Oh, God. See, I feel like we should actually explain the game to these people. So, in this game, each card is given a grade from 0 to 3. What a player does is they pick a grade 0 card from their deck and put it on the mat. That starts as their card. Then from there, they can write a card that is put a card on top of their grade 0, which I guess overrides it, which is either the same grade or one higher. Then they can call in rear guards, who are just support units. These ones, they can be the same grade or one lower. Rear guards in front can attack, rear guards behind, they just lend their power to the guy in front. And you have to attack their middle guy, which is their vanguard, and every time you deal damage to him, they take a card from their deck and put it into their damage pool. They get 6 damage, that person loses. It's very simple, and I feel like that actually kind of helps, like, add to some of the thing, because this way you can watch the game and actually understand what's happening, and people will be, you'll actually be able to, like, see the tense moments and actually know what's going on. It's not just okay, what's happening? I don't know what's going on.
Honestly, I'm starting to be quite happy about the fact that the English dub is coming. So this card game might just catch on in North America, and I would play it.
Yeah, I definitely want to play it. Like, if I had money, I'd probably go out and buy a deck, even though I don't have anyone to play with. Because I am just that stupid.
It'd be great if you were in London, then I'd have someone to play card games with more often, too.
Well, eventually.
From that side note.
Eventually.
I would honestly play this game, because it is like Weiss Schwarz, which is a game that I sometimes play, only a lot simpler.
Yeah. But
the only advantage to Weiss Schwarz being that you're playing with decks of different anime.
Yeah, it's just, there are just a couple of things, there are just many, many, many things in this show that just kind of bother you. Like, little things, but they add up.
Oh, like, the show I don't exactly love, but the card game, I do.
The card game is a really cool card game. It's just, one of the things that is, like, kind of bugging me is, like I said, all the overdramaticness. Like, I understand the overdramaticness for this thing, because it's an anime. You can't have just, like, if you didn't have people playing a regular-ass card game, it'd be kind of a boring show.
Yeah, have you ever sat and... Of course you have. Have you ever sat and watched people... Pudge, have you ever sat and watched people play Magic? It's fucking boring.
I play Warhammer. So.
That's even more boring.
Yeah, just watching people measuring distances. But yeah, so... I get that, but there's just... So many weird effects on everything, and I'm just like... It's like, wait, what? Okay, this card's on fire. What the fuck is going on? Like, are other people seeing this? Am I just on drugs?
It's interesting because there are the two guys who see each other's cards reacting to them, and like, it's like a plot point.
Yeah, and so I'm just wondering if everyone around them isn't seeing this. They're just seeing, like, they're just like talking to themselves, like, why are they playing so flamboyantly?
It's Japan. It's normal.
But yeah, and so there are many, 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 many other things that annoy me. This is one thing. It's not really an annoyance, but it's just something that was kind of weird. So in the card shop, there is a poster for Cardfight Vanguard of like doing it, and the main character of the show was on the poster.
Oh.
Yeah.
The main character, Aichi Sendo, is on a poster advertising the game that he just started playing.
Maybe he got into it because he got, like, a modeling job.
He didn't, though. He just, like, when he was, like, 7, he got a card from a guy, then started obsessing over building a deck, then he built the deck, and then he never played.
Until he finally met that guy who stole the card from him. Well, off a guy who stole it from him.
Yeah, and so that's another thing that kind of bugs me. So, two of the main guys, Morikawa and Izaki, at the first episode of the show, they mug this kid for his card. They mug the main character for his cards. And then, all of a sudden, they're best buds. It's like...
I was bothered by Kai's logic of, I won this card fair and square, but they stole it from me. Doesn't matter, I won it from them. But they stole it from me. It wasn't theirs to bet.
Yeah, and... Kai is another thing that really bugs me. So, in the first two episodes, Aichi beats Kai. He beats him. Like, he actually beats him, fair and square. Gets his card back. And then, every time Aichi's like, hey, want to fight? It's like, Kai's like, you're not worthy. It's like, but he beat you. Like, I'm looking for someone who's worthy to fight. Aichi, he beat you. It's like, no one here's worthy to fight me. Aichi, he fucking beat you.
His first time playing.
Yes, with a not even completed deck. He only got up to grade 2.
Does he ever get grade 3s?
Yes, he does. He actually builds a completely full deck. With multiple grade 3s, including, I guess, the like higher level version of Blaster Blade called the King of Knights Alfred. Who's able to get, like, 20,000 attack power. But, yeah, but another thing that really bugs me, so, Morikawa, he is terrible. Like, he is actually one of the worst players out of this game in the show.
Yeah.
He never wins.
I was like, before it was explained, I'm like, oh, I can see why his deck is totally, really badly balanced.
He has grade 3 everything, hardly any grade 2s, or grade 1s. So we can't actually ride up to level 3. But he's never won a single game. But he never shuts the fuck up about the fact that he's the greatest at his high school, at his junior high, even though Aichi beat him multiple times. He's like, I'm the greatest. How many matches have you won? Absolutely none. I'm the greatest. And it just really bugs me. I don't know why. But just this motherfucker claiming that he's the greatest, even though he's never won a single fucking match on screen.
There are people like that.
Probably, but I don't give a fuck. He's still really annoying.
You know who he is? He's Ace.
Yes, exactly. He's Ace.
He has the money to spend on getting all the ridiculously powerful cards, doesn't know how to play the fucking game, but still thinks he's awesome. He's fucking Ace.
Yeah, for anyone who isn't from our town, you don't know who the fuck we're talking about. But, believe me, you don't want to know.
You probably know someone like Ace, though.
Yeah.
Imagine that rich kid who shows up and is able to throw their money at whatever at X hobby that you have, sucks at X hobby, and yet is constantly shouting at about how great they are. That is Ace.
And occasionally he shows up with bandages wrapped around his head because he shot himself in the ear. But anyway, so another thing that really bugged me. So, Aichi in the show has a sister. Her name's Amy. And I'm pretty sure she's adopted. Because everyone else in the family has blue hair and she has brown hair.
But she has the same eyes.
Okay, so she isn't adopted, but I'm guessing that her daddy isn't the same as Aichi's daddy.
Exactly.
So anyway, she goes to this one school, which, as everyone says, it is the school for the super rich girls. But Aichi goes to a regular... Ash Junior High. So, I'm just wondering, is the family actually rich and all the money goes directly to Amy? Or did the family just hate Aichi so much that they don't give him anything? Or
maybe,
did Or did or is Amy or does Amy actually have a different father who is paying for her schooling?
That's a possibility.
This just adds to my fact.
I was
going to
say that Aichi wants to go to a regular school.
Bitch, he would. Bitch, at the beginning of the show, he is such a pussy. He wouldn't care where he went. It's like, hey, you're going to the school. Okay.
Man, rich kids could be more of dicks. Also, it's possible that a really fancy junior high would cost more than a really fancy elementary school.
Maybe, but fuck, it still pisses me off that, like, hey, his sister gets to go to, like, this fancy school with all the newest shit, and this guy gets this.
Yeah, I noticed it too, and honestly, yeah. I'm just doing my job as a plot hole filler here.
Yeah, and, like, it's said that the sister has been going to these schools for her entire life, because she goes to the school for the first time, it's like, wait, the school doesn't have a security guard? The fuck is wrong with this place? Yeah. And so, moving on, then there's Kamui. Kamui is a grade schooler, and he is one of the better players in the game, in the show. He's one of the main characters, I'm pretty sure, if the title screen is to be believed. And he is just big. He's actually a really good player. Like, even Aichi's never been able to beat him. And he is just really annoying, I find. Never shuts up. He's just always boasting about everything. And any really general sayings, he can't even get right. Like, you know how, like, in some games, it's like, all right, let's see what you got. And then they go to play. He can't even get that right. He has to say, let's see what you caught. And just, as someone who spent so much time editing grammar mistakes like that, and editing wrong words put into places, it really fucking bugs me. Like, I'm guessing if I didn't do this, I wouldn't mind it so much. But since I do this for so many hours a day, I always start noticing these things a lot more, and it really fucking bugs me. But the one thing that bugs me is his bitches. Because even those kids in grade school, he has bitches. Yeah, girls that follow him around and, like, fawn and, like, worship everything that he does. But there's one girl who only speaks in first letters and yo. So, like, the one girl who... So, like, there's one girl who has glasses. Is like, oh, man, you're super awesome. It's like, oh, Kamui. And then the other girl who has, like, a weird, like, knock coming out of her head, she's like, S.A., yo! Which, I guess, S.A. is an abbreviation for super awesome. And that's all she speaks in.
They have a mentally handicapped friend.
Fuck mental handicaps. Like, I have one, but fuck them. That mental handicaps shouldn't be able to keep you from either from speaking in full sentences. Especially mental handicaps to let you dress yourself and walk around and have friends. If you have the mental facilities to worship somebody, you should have the mental facilities to speak in full sentences.
Maybe this person doesn't actually worship him. Maybe she just repeats whatever the other person says in those abbreviations.
She does have one or two parts where she actually speaks in sentences.
Could be severe obsessive compulsive disorder. Very severe.
Every time she opens her mouth, I just want to beat her to death with her own hair.
Or Tourette's. Yeah, let's go with Tourette's.
Whatever, it's still fucking annoying. And also in one episode, there are some weird kind of pedo undertones.
Actually, go ahead and finish, but you just reminded me of something.
Yeah, so Kamui, as it turns out, falls in love almost immediately with Aichi's sister Emmy. And so he starts having, like, his, like, weird fantasies of, like, hey, let's go over, like, oh my god, she brought him a box lunch, let's go out for a picnic, and yay. And they go out there, and they're, like, skipping through a tulip field with, like, lunch basket in hand, and saxophone is playing over with weird, kind of erotic lady moans. Keep in mind, these kids are in grade school. So, like, skipping through the tulips, and just saxophone playing over it. And at one point he says, don't touch my goddess's boxed lunch. Yep. It's fantastic out of context line. It's just... is really fucking fuck.
Yeah, there were a couple episodes where I'm where I really felt that it was being played that Itchy's gay.
Okay, which episodes?
First of all, it would have been episode 3, I believe, when his sister's following him.
Mm-hmm.
Everything she's seeing said that is being that she's misinterpreting makes it seem like he's going to have some back alley gay sex.
Yes, inside of a card shop. That's the thing. Like she, well, like, they,
even,
like she sees
even
them
before they get to the card shop. It's like, oh fuck, what is it?
It's like, oh, she got like Ichi's wrapped up with some bad men. I wonder what they're gonna do to him.
Yeah, but everything that they're saying that she's misinterpreting is like, oh, you want to go another round, do you? Oh, what, I don't satisfy you? No, I'm not saying that.
I'm going to give it to you real hard today.
Yes, shit like that. It's like, he's going to get his ass pounded.
Yeah, and they actually go into the card shop. She sees them go into the card shop, and she imagines what's inside. She just sees, like, a really dark, dirty alley where, like, a bunch of guys are standing there ready to rape him. But then she goes inside and is like, oh no, wait, this isn't a rape shack.
And then,
actually, speaking of card shops, this actually reminded me of something else. You can finish your thing, but I just remember something else.
And then later, he's, you know, there's an episode where he's looking for Kai, and he's sitting there talking to the manager, and it's like, well, it's just, Kai hasn't been here in a while, and it's like, oh, why are you so interested in him? And he, like, freaks out and drops his cards and blushes. It's like, okay, you're gay. You have a hard-on for Kai. There's nothing wrong with that, but let's stop making it undertones. Let's at least have some balls about this.
Yeah, it's kind of like a... It kind of sounds like a slash-fic version of, like, the Yugi Kaiba relationship that was in, like, the first few episodes of Yu-Gi-Oh!
Oh my god, just like, that is exactly it. This is, yeah, Yu-Gi-Oh! Like, plus Slash.
Yeah, just like a really, like, it's really like a non-imposing, just like really, like, low-key guy who gets, like, doesn't have much confidence, but is really good at playing cards against this huge fucking asshole who's, like, amazing at cards and who's his rival, but they're also kind of having this weird gay lust with each other. But anyway, so, speaking of card shops, one thing I wanted to mention. So there's one episode which was a bit bizarre. So, Aichi Morizawa and Izaki, they go into the city to go find a card shop. So they could go to some place other than Card Capital. And they find one called Sai. They go inside, and at the front they have just a bunch of weird pillars that have, like, cards floating in them. And they're all super rare cards, but they're all just, like, holograms of the super rare cards. So then they go into the back, led by a girl with pigtails bigger than her body. And they see this huge fucking playmat thing with this weird arena thing in the middle of it. So Morizawa, he's like fucking around with it. He can't figure out how to turn it on. Then Aichi just touches it and it turns on. And all the while there's this woman with an iPad watching them and giggling to herself.
The arena only responds to the chosen one,
I guess. And so then a woman comes along who, I guess, had been in previous tournaments, and she was a pretty good card player. She used the exact same deck as Aichi. They have a match, he loses, and then the woman comes out, and she looks exactly like Eureka from Eureka 7. I'm not even kidding. Same hair color, same face, same body type. Everything is the exact same. She looks like an older version of Eureka. This is what happened after she went to the Scub Coral, in the Sub Coral. She went back in time and became the owner of this insane card shop. She harnessed Trapar waves to make holographic projections of your playing cards.
It all makes sense now.
Yeah. Is Yu-Gi-Oh! Cross with Slash Fiction cross with Eureka 7? It's so fucking weird. And final thing I want to say that kind of annoyed me was all the misunderstandings. Like, there are so many.
And the only one I'm aware of is, you know, his sister's misunderstandings when he's not coming home and whatnot.
There's a sister's misunderstanding.
And it's really pointless.
Yeah, they're all really pointless. Like, there's a sister misunderstanding with that. And then there's commonly misunderstanding the relationship between Aichi and Amy, thinking that, hey, this junior high school student is actually dating the 7-year-old. And then that's why they start fighting. And then there's the misunderstanding that happens, like with you, and with you said, and like, oh, so you're that kind of way with Kai, and like throwing everything. And then there's another one that might implicit he's gay, where Kanwi takes him to a different card shop, which has a pirate theme to it, oddly enough. And so like the main guy from that pirate shop's little sister is in love with Kanwi, and Kanwi's like, no, I'm not in love with you. I'm not in love with somebody else. I'm in love with Aichi's. And he can't actually say a little sister. He can't actually say her name. So he just starts stammering. And even though they hear him trying to say another word, they're like, wait, you don't love my sister, so you love this guy? And at no point does he dispute it at all. At no point does he try to go like, we're not like that at all. Like Kamui is like screaming about it, and no one's listening to him. Because I guess they're so just fucking gung-ho about beating up this gay guy who's keeping this kid from being with his little sister.
Well, I understand your misunderstandings, and I will let you continue. I don't consider anything showing Aichi as gay or lusting after Kai as a misunderstanding.
No, but this isn't Aichi lusting after Kai.
Continue.
This is a misunderstanding where a guy who dresses like a pirate at all times thinks that this other guy thinks that this guy who this his little sister is in love with this other guy. And there are so many of them, and they're so stupid, and it could easily and they're not easily mis not easy misunderstandings. These people actually have to like block out everything else a person says after a certain word to actually have this be a misunderstanding.
Well, yeah, IT even points that out with the one thing where it's like, no, I just said she's my sister.
I remember watching that. They never actually talked about him being being siblings until the end, like after the fight.
Anyways.
Yeah, like the shopkeeper lady points out that they're brother and sister at the very end, after the fight. It's like, all right, I won now. All right, I won now. Break up with her. It's like, what? But. We're not. But no, this one is...
Oh, sorry, I had that confused in another moment. My bad.
Yeah, this one is, I'm not in love... Like, I'm not in love with you. I'm in love with this guy's... Like, you're in love with this guy? It's like, no, I'm not. I'm in love with his sister. I'm in love with his sister, Mrs. Whatever. Mrs. Because he can't actually say her name without freaking out and blushing. And the guy's like, well, fuck this. If you love this guy, I gotta beat him in a card fight. Even though he just said, I'm in love with his sister. It's fucking... These are very little things, but they are little things that really bug me. I don't know why. I don't know why either.
I'm going to say more along the lines of, the show isn't great, but I do like the card game.
Yeah, the show isn't great. It is a card game TV show. Those can only have, like... There's like a glass ceiling for how good those shows can be. And it's a very low glass ceiling.
But I will say that this show is probably pretty close to that ceiling.
Yeah, it is.
It's much better than Yu-Gi-Oh!
Oh god, yes. Because there isn't any of that retarded shit of, oh hey, Yu-Gi actually has the like personality of an Egyptian pharaoh living inside this necklace that his grandpa stole from like a museum or something. And then we play this card game that's apparently been existing since ancient Egyptian times to play for our souls, and this one guy has a Brooklyn accent even though he's from Japan. Fuck. But yeah, so that's Card Fight Vanguard. It's a card fight. It's a card fighting show. That's all we can really say about it. You know, if you dislike card fighting shows, then don't watch it. If you've been able to watch Yu-Gi-Oh! for X amount of time, you could probably watch this for a bit longer than that time.
We'll say X times 1.4.
Yeah, sure, let's go with that. You'll be able to watch 40% more episodes. It's there's just so many little things that bug me that it keeps me from enjoying the show as much as a show like that can be enjoyed. But yeah. So, Punchatron, is your next pick for the next anime club anime? What are we going to be watching?
we are going to be watching Kamen no Maid Guy. Last minute decision.
Kamen no Maid Guy?
Yes. I feel I didn't get across how weird this was. It's kind of you need to see to believe kind of thing.
Okay, so yeah, next week we're going to be watching Kamen no Maid Guy. And yeah, so this week there will be a anime club supplement for the first episode, and there will be one 2 weeks from now when we do this again. But I guess until that time, we have on Friday we're going to be posting the commentary track for Evil Dead 2: Dead by Dawn, part of the Cabin in the Woods month. Then on Sunday we're going to be having the Anything Cast live, where I believe we're going to be joined by the sound designer and composer for Dust Force, Terrence Lee from Hitbox Team. Then on Wednesday, we're going to be having comics, as well as my bi-weekly article series that runs opposite to Budgetron's Personal Issues, which is about comics. And then next Friday, we're going to be having the movies podcast, as well as commentary track for Army of Darkness. But until all that, I'm the Dead Man.
I'm Obi-Wan.
And I'm Budgetron.
See you guys next time.